y'all welcome, from Oklahoma, Congressman James Lankford.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, absolutely my pleasure to get a chance to be with you and have this conversation. I need to correct one thing on my introduction, though. I did not run the largest youth camp in Virginia. It was in Oklahoma, which is kind of down the street from Virginia. So if you get on the right street. This morning, I want us to be able to have a conversation. Is that all right with you? I'm going to talk through a couple of things in the story. I'm going to tell you a couple of things that are happening in Washington, D.C. right now that God is actually at work. I know, shocking as that may be. And I'm going to try to set up some perspective for you to say, here's some of the things that I've seen on the other side of this. So I do want this to be a conversation. Now, I mentioned last night, I had 22 years in youth ministry, which is amazing for me to speak to pastors anytime, that pastors would listen, not that I would speak. But the joy that I have is to be able to be in ministry for so many years, directing a youth camp, working with teenagers in a local church, and my commitment to that. And I still continue to preach on a regular basis. This is still who I am. I've not left who I am, nor do I think you have to leave who you are. Article 6 of the Constitution is very clear, and we lose track of it both in faith and in politics. Article 6 of the Constitution is one of those small little sections no one notices. It says there's no religious test for any officer of the United States. There's no religious test. You don't have to have a faith or leave your faith to be in office. You can still live your faith and still be who you have always been. Now, there is a difference between someone who has a faith and lives it and someone who has a hobby and lives it. Now, there's a big difference. If your faith is really your hobby, it's something you do on weekends, but it doesn't affect your day-to-day life, then you're right. It's going to be something you occasionally mention. It's something you do on weekends. But if it's your faith, it permeates everything you do. It permeates how you live. It permeates how you drive. Come on. It permeates how you treat your spouse, how you treat your children. It permeates how you vote, how you interact with people, even what you do on a day-to-day basis with people that disagree with you, because it's not a hobby. It's a faith. And it permeates all of it. I accepted Christ when I was 8 years old. I was an 8-year-old redheaded punk little kid who for once actually listened in church, shocking as that may seem. I was that kid. I was a kid that you would not have noticed or seen. My parents divorced when I was 4 years old. We moved back in with my grandparents, and my mom wanted to attend a church where she could go and just blend in and just be there. And so we attended a small little inner city church in Dallas called First Baptist Church of Dallas. At the time, I believe it was the largest church in America. Dr. W.A. Criswell was my pastor growing up. And growing up with Dr. Criswell and listening to his preaching, I remember at 8 years old sitting in the balcony. And I sat in the balcony because I apparently, according to my mom, I don't remember all this, but apparently I misbehaved occasionally. And so that was easy for her to be able to pull me out and discuss with me in the hallway what a bad idea that was to misbehave in church. So as I'm sitting in church one Sunday night, I remember Dr. Criswell preaching, and I remembered only this amount. I knew that there was a God, and I did not know him. As simple as that 8-year-old boy faith was. Laying in bed that night, I couldn't shake that simple reality. And laying in bed by myself late that night, I prayed and accepted Christ. For me to be able to go in and check in with Dr. Criswell and be able to sit down and go through basic counseling and to be able to be baptized. Easter Sunday, 1976, by the way, if you want to count the math on that one. So 8 years old, accepting Christ and beginning a journey for me. In many ways, I didn't grow. And I got involved in RAs and I got involved in all kinds of things to be able to go, but I really didn't grow much. We later moved and got plugged into a church and got plugged into a youth ministry, and I still didn't grow. And I was a junior in high school before I remember making the decision, this is either real or it's not. And if it's real, I'm going to live it. If this is real, and I believe he is, and I believe walking by faith is true, then I'm going to actually walk that out and live that. And that simple decision for me changed the course of my life. Now, I have to tell you, I have zero politics in my background. Zero. I didn't even run for student council. Okay? This is not my deal. But from fourth grade on, I was involved in speech and debate. I was the nerdy kid that read the newspaper. I was that kid. So I was always engaged in the issues, but never involved in anything in politics. Called to ministry as a senior in high school the best way I knew how. My call to ministry, though, to me was a challenge for me personally because I was trying to figure this out. No one in my family had ever been in ministry before. And so I was trying to figure out one simple thing. What does it mean to follow him? What does that mean? Because the best I understood, the disciples all had the exact same call. Come, follow me. And starting as a senior in high school, I began the process of trying to listen to God and say, God, what I want to do for the rest of my life is follow you. And I am absolutely convinced people are not called to a vocation, they're called to a person. And then God assigns our vocation. It is not his responsibility to tell me what I'm going to do the rest of my life. It's my responsibility to determine who I'm going to follow the rest of my life. And then he will assign tasks as he chooses to assign tasks. And I've got to tell you, I'm as shocked as everyone else that I'm doing what I'm doing right now. Because this is not what I expected. After 22 years of ministry, my wife and I, during 2008, really sensed that God was calling us, and we didn't know what it meant. We heard God say to us over and over in our quiet times, in worship times, times of sitting in church, one simple thing, get ready. Now, when you hear God say to you, get ready, that's really exciting for about a month. And then after 6 months, it's a little unsettling. And 6 months into this, in September of 2008, I had just spoken at a Sea at the Pole rally in eastern Oklahoma, and I'm driving home saying, God, I have taught students for 20-plus years how to hear your voice, and I do not understand what you're saying. I cannot figure this out. Everyone in this room has probably been at that same spot. And driving the whole way home that night, I got back in late, was just reading the news, struggling with God, trying to figure out what had just happened during the day while I was out and about. And there was a little news story that said the person that was in Congress at that time was considering running for governor 2 years later. And I can't explain it other than as I'm reading just through the news, and that little clip came up on the news, I'm reading through it. It was as the Spirit of God poking me in the chest and saying, that's what I want you to do. And I remember leaning back in my chair and saying, well, God, that's insane. That's not even rational. That's not even possible. And he and I had a conversation about it that night, and I explained to him all the details of that. And I went to bed. I didn't tell my wife about it. You know, we talked about other things. And 3 days later, I could not get away from it. Have you had those moments before when God didn't speak audibly, but it was crystal clear? 3 days later, I couldn't get away from it. So I'm back in my study, going back through, and I thought, okay, God, I'm going to at least look and see what the boundaries of the district are. I'm going to at least look and see some of the statistics of all this. So I'm looking at all this. My wife comes walking in. Our computer faces the middle of the room. She comes, walks in, looks over my shoulder, goes, what are you looking at? And I said, county statistics. And I kept waiting for her to say, well, why are you looking at county statistics? But instead, she hesitated for a long time, and she said, we're about to run for Congress, aren't we? I said, why do you say that? She said, I just know. I said, oh, we need to talk. So we determined that night we were going to pray for a month, and that was going to be our deadline. We're giving God a deadline. You know how that works out. So we're going to give God a deadline, and I can honestly tell you, I really believe that night, we're going to pray about this for a month, and at the end of the month, God's going to show us the ram in the thicket and is going to say, don't kill Isaac, kill that, you're fine. Okay, stay right where you are. Continue doing what you're doing. But that 1 month became 7 months. And by March of 2009, it had moved from anxiety over this to grief in my heart that I knew what God was calling me to do, and I was not doing it. And I remember leaving church one Sunday morning and saying to my wife, I'm going to be an old man one day telling my grandchildren about the time I didn't follow God. And I've determined to not be that man. I don't understand why, but we have to do this. To which she smiled at me and said, I've been waiting on you. I resigned my position as director of Falls Creek in September of 2009. And we walked out with nothing behind us, burned the ships, and said, this is what God has called us to do. Now, the hard part about that is everyone's going to come to you and is going to say, why are you running? And in politics, you're supposed to say the economy's at such a tirade and everything's so bad that I've got to step in and lead this. Or to say there's some regulation on my business, I've got to go fix that. I got to look at reporters in the face and say, well, you're not going to like this, but I really sense that God's called me to do this. and I'm going to do whatever I can to be able to serve our nation and serve God. And they would look at me dumbfounded and say, that's it? So that's all I've got. But I know this is what God has called us to do. And where he is called, he's going to lead. Now, I've got to tell you, as a Christian, I have a unique responsibility. Because I believe God will use a person however he chooses to use a person if they do what they're doing in excellence. If you're sloppy as a pastor, you'll have sloppy results as a pastor. If you do it with excellence, you will have excellent results. If you're going to be a legislator and you're going to be a Christian, you better live it out with integrity and be the best legislator on that hill. Because if you're not a good legislator, people in my district will say, he's a good guy, but he's a terrible legislator. We need a different kind of person to get up there and do it. I want the people behind me to say that's the kind of person to send, because they will both get the job done and they'll do it with integrity. We won't have to worry about what we read about them in the paper. But let me just tell you something interesting I learned. I worked with churches and pastors and leaders for 2 decades, and I suddenly learned the church is afraid of politics. Because I had friends that I had friends for a long time, that after I announced and shocked everyone to death that I was resigning and was running for Congress, because no one saw that one coming, I had lots of friends that said, gosh, I'm so excited you're doing that. And I would say, still the same person, still doing the same stuff, can I preach at your church still? And they would go, no, not anymore. And I would say, I'm not going to talk about politics, but this is just still who I am. And they would go, I don't know. I had a friend of mine that's been a lifelong friend, it's a long story to be able to tell, a gentleman named Chris Tomlin, that he and I have been friends since literally he was in high school. And we traveled together and did a lot of stuff together in our earliest years. Chris came in and did a concert for me when I was running for Congress. And I would call pastors and I would say, Chris Tomlin's going to come in, he's going to do a free concert. Is your church willing to host it? Now, what would you say if I said, Chris Tomlin wants to come host it? Yeah. But they would say, I would also tell them he's going to actually talk about me running because he and I are friends, and that's going to be part of the conversation. Now, I've checked this with the IRS, and they've said it okay, and I've checked it with the Ethics Commission, and they've said it's okay. Everyone's cleared it. Almost every person that I talked to said, no, we can't do that. If it has anything related to politics to it. I had yesterday, a Christian college contact me that I was scheduled to speak at in a few weeks saying, I've got some pushback from some of the folks at the university about you speaking, and can we not have you come? A Christian college. Can I just tell you, the church is afraid of one of the things that God designed. He designed the family, he designed the church, and he designed government. And for whatever reason, the church has become afraid of government. And we live in fear of government, and we don't speak about the issues that are within our culture. We've lost track of that. Here's a challenge for you. Name me a book in the Old Testament that was not written to a political leader, by a political leader, or about a political leader. Go ahead. Start thinking through your 39 books. Think through the 39 books. Name me one that wasn't written by a political leader, to a political leader, or about a political leader. I think there are 2 of the 39. That'll give you something to think about through the rest of the time when you get bored of me speaking, trying to figure out what those 2 are. How about this? Paul's calling. When he's Saul, he's struck blind on the road to Damascus. As he struck blind on the road to Damascus, and he stumbles his way into Damascus. And when he gets there, Ananias has this vision. And God says to him, I want you to go over to Straight Street, and I want you to lay your hands on this man. And Ananias says, Lord, do you know who this guy is? You know what he's done? You know what he's here for? And God responds back to him, he is my appointed messenger to the Jews, the Gentiles, and the Gentile kings. And for the rest of the book of Acts, where do you follow Paul? Speaking to Jews, speaking to Gentiles, ending up before Gentile kings and leaders. One after another, after another, after another. I'm going to tell you, God is interested in government. And I'm not talking about a theocracy, but God is compassionate to people that he has created. And he is interested in how we are governed, that it is righteous, that it is done with integrity. I read through the book of Proverbs in a different way now, remembering that the book of Proverbs was written by a dad or a mom, depending on the chapter you're going. Remember, chapter 31 was written by a mom, that was over. Trying to read to the next generation of leaders, of government, to say, if you're going to lead this nation in this area, this is how you're to do it. God is interested in what's going on. And the issue for the church is, are we committed to do that? And how do we actually do it? I'm going to actually read off my phone. This is kind of funny because you're all disappointed, and I can see your faces on you because Governor Huckabee was supposed to be in this spot. But if you've not walked outside today, it's pea soup outside currently right now, and no planes are landing. And so he was flying in this morning, and I was supposed to speak at lunchtime today, and they caught me just about 10 minutes beforehand and said, we need to switch you. So all of my stuff is still upstairs. But this is a... I'm gonna be ready in season and out of season, if that's okay with you, and be able to read off my phone here. But by the way, if you have a phone with a data plan on it and you don't have the Bible, the YouVersion on it, you ought to go get that. It's free. And you can carry scripture around with you every single time. And if you've got the little one that just says Holy Bible that looks like a Bible on it, let me tell you a fun secret. That's actually done in Oklahoma City. It's the top Bible app in the world, and no one knows where it's coming from because the church that's pulled it together has done it quietly behind the scenes, as well you should. But it's the top Bible app in the world, and it's done right out of Oklahoma City. So there's a little trivia for you. 1 Peter chapter 2, I'm going to read this passage to you because I think we need to get it and we need to understand it. 1 Peter chapter 2 is one of the challenges, and Peter is writing to a group of people that are living completely foreign in their society. They're Christians, but they're living foreign in it. And as they're trying to figure out, how do we actually represent Christ in a community that does not know Christ and doesn't understand anything about Jesus? He writes to them and he says this great statement, you're a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God. Why? So that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness and into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. That's that great crux statement. That's the theme statement of all of 1 Peter. And then he walks from there after doing theology at the beginning of it, and then he gets this crux statement. It's, here's who you are. You're called out of darkness into his wonderful light to proclaim him. And then he walks into, here's how to do it. How do you proclaim him into a culture that doesn't understand anything about it? Because remember, this is the statement where he says, you're aliens, you're strangers in the world. That's that whole statement there from 2 Peter. And then he says this, here's how you do it. Number one, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13, submit yourself to the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to king as the one in authority or to governors as those who are sent by him to punish evildoers and to praise those who do right. For such is the will of God, that by doing right, you may silence the ignorant talk of foolish men. Act as free men, but do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as a bondslave of God. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. It's interesting to me that we lose track of when Peter wrote to them and he said, you're going to stand out, you're going to stick out as a culture, I want you to represent Christ in this culture, and let me give you a few ideas how to do it. Number one, honor authority. Why? Because no one does it, that's why. No one honors authority in that culture or this culture. And if you do that, it so stands out that everyone turns around and says, why do you do that? And it gives you an opportunity to be able to share the gospel because you do it different than anyone else is doing it. Here's what that looks like for me. Every morning when I'm in Washington, D.C., in my office in the Cannon Building, I prayer walk my floor. And I pray for every one of the members and their staff on my floor. It's Democrats, Republicans, it's everybody. And I take the opportunity to be able to pray for all of them and all their staff. I take the opportunity to be able to share my faith with people. Again, it goes back to my obligation to be a good legislator, to be able to earn the right to be able to speak out. I've had the opportunity to be able to lead another member of Congress to Christ. I've had an opportunity to lead a lobbyist to Christ. I've had an opportunity to be able to speak out to staff and to interns. You don't get that opportunity if all you do is run down people. And I've got to tell you, 6 months after I was there in Congress, I called my wife one night from D.C. I said, I just figured it out. I have that deja vu feeling when you're in Congress. I said, I've just figured out what that feeling is. It's middle school lunch. Just been able to identify it. Remember in middle school lunch, you're at your table with your friends, and your main job in middle school lunch is to run down everyone else's friends at their table? To criticize, pick at, say mean things. That's what you do because it's middle school lunch. And if you say something nice about somebody else, everybody looks at your table like, why'd you say that? But if you say something really rude and mean, everybody says, way to go. Welcome to Congress. But you don't earn the right to be able to present the gospel, because my goals are not only to get things done legislatively, but I want people to come to know and follow the God that I know. We cannot lose perspective of that. The church is the location that exalts Christ every single day. We have that responsibility to be able to lift up the gospel every moment of every place that we go. We exhibit that in how we do government different than anyone else. The way we speak about it, the way we stand up for what's right. We do stand up for those that have been run over. We do stand up for justice. And we do it in a way that actually honors God and people in the long term in the process. So what's my challenge to you? Let me give you a couple ideas. Number one is this: set the example and set the tone. There are people in your church that watch Fox News more than they read their Bible by far. And they're very passionate about these issues happening in our nation. Here's what they need. They need a biblical worldview to be able to apply what's happening in the world to them. They need to figure out how to do that. They're going to talk about it all the time. So will you. These conversations are happening in the hallways at work right now, and people talking to their friends and people talking to their family members. It's around dinner tables and conversations in the car. It's at school right now. They talk about all the current events of the day, and then they get to church on Sunday, and they can't figure out where current events connects to Scripture. Because for whatever reason, so many churches never discuss anything that's current events with a biblical worldview so that people walk out of church on Sunday knowing how to speak about what's happening in real life. We're great at theology, and we should be. But we've got to also be able to equip people with, what do you do with it? When a guy walks into a workplace who's been working on converting his other coworkers to Islam for a month, he gets fired, turns around, walks back in, and beheads one of the people in the office. What do you do with that from a Christian worldview? They're talking about it. How do they talk about it through the lens of Scripture? They won't know until you help them with that. You are the professional on those things. You have studied it more than they have. They need your help because they want to walk with God, and they're trying to figure out how to do that. By the way, that gentleman in Moore, Oklahoma that did that, the ex-con who had converted to Islam while he was in prison, who had been working to convert the people around him, you're hearing that it's workplace violence. There's no question it was violence in the workplace. I think that's unquestioned. But I can tell you from talking to law enforcement folks there that he identifies it as this is his responsibility as a Muslim to do this to other people. This is way more than workplace violence. People want to know what to do with that. People are trying to figure out from a Christian worldview, how do we process what's happening in Syria? People are trying to figure out from a Christian worldview, how do we process politics and life and day-to-day stuff? Now, I'm not saying you should preach every week out of the newspaper. Please don't. But when big issues come up, it would be of help for your small group leaders and for the people in your congregation to know how to speak about things that are happening in real life from a biblical worldview. They want to do that the next week at work, but they don't know how until you help them. Second thing is, if you have elected officials at your church, mentor them, disciple them. I can tell you, on a week-to-week basis, I have people pull me aside in the House of Representatives that'll catch me and talk about their marriage, talk about their kids, talk about what's going on, because they have nowhere else to go. Pastors, pull your elected officials aside and help them because their families are falling apart and they have no one they can talk to. You have a unique opportunity, whether you have a school board member or a member of Congress in your church. You have a unique opportunity to influence and help someone gain a Christian worldview and perspective that will be an influencer in the public arena. Don't squander that opportunity. They need your help. Third thing, teach people how to do family. Now, I know this may not sound like government. It is, I promise. You want limited government? So do I. You know how you get limited government? Stronger families. That's how it happens. When you have strong families, you have very little need for government. When you have weak families, you have a great need for a large government. And this government is doing everything it can to accelerate. And the larger the government grows, the weaker the families get. That does not turn around until families get strong again. In this generation, people do not know how to do families. There are many people that are in your church and many people that live around your church that have never, ever seen a functioning marriage. Never. Now, we lose track of that. They've never seen a functioning marriage. Your older couples mentoring younger couples, teaching people how to parent all over again, and doing it with a biblical worldview is a tremendous gift not only to your church and to your community, but to our nation. The issues we deal with will continue to be issues until we can have a restoration of the family. I'm telling you, Washington, D.C. does not fix the nation. The nation fixes Washington, D.C. And the way that occurs is the family. Here's a shocker to set the example. It's number four. Pray more than we complain. We as Christians are getting drawn into doing things the world's way and making excuses for it. Pray more than we complain. Stay engaged. But do it the right way. I am fully aware that Jesus flipped tables over and there are moments of righteous indignation that are entirely appropriate. But you also find that is a rare moment in the life of Jesus. If you're a person that likes to flip over tables every day, there may be a problem. And let me give you a final one. For Pete's sake, vote. Romans chapter 13, 1 Peter chapter 2, both give this admonition to Christians and how we interact with government. But that was not elected government at the time. That was oppressive Roman government. And even in oppressive Roman government, the admonition was there to be able to honor authority and to be able to represent Christ, because the highest aspiration was that they would be won over to Christ. We're in a different situation in America, and we are incredibly grateful. We live in a nation that has on the back wall of the House of Representatives in big gold letters, "In God We Trust." Every time I stand up to speak in the House chamber and I look up, you know whose face is looking at me? Moses. It's the back wall of the House of Representatives facing me, full frontal looking at me as I speak, is Moses staring at me. It's a little intimidating, by the way. Looks a lot like Charlton Heston, by the way. We live in a nation where we can speak about our faith and we can participate in government. Don't you think Paul would have loved to have lived in that nation? We get to. Why would we not participate and engage? Why would we not do that? We should. The church is going to lead. It's going to lead in all the areas that God instituted, the family, the church, and in government, to be an influence in those areas. It's what God has called us to do. Now, you'll face the same thing I will all the time. I don't know if you've noticed it, but not everyone in Washington, D.C. that I work with walks with God. Shocking, I know. But what is my role in the middle of that? To influence, to be engaged. Stay engaged. Not only vote, challenge your folks to vote and to stay engaged. We can be an influence more than you can possibly imagine. Couldn't be more grateful for what you're doing. Have tremendous respect. I have to tell you, as a young seminary student, I had my cocky swagger self as a young seminary student, looking at all these guys that had been in ministry for years. Now I see it completely different at 46 years old. I see folks that have been in ministry for years and have tremendous respect because I've seen how many people over the years have walked away from their faith. You have not. God bless you for that. We need you in the fight. Keep up the work, and we'll watch and see what God does. One last statement. As we struggle with what's happening as a nation and who we are, I would say to you, at the very end, at Sodom and Gomorrah, God was pulling the believers out of there. He's still sending the believers in to D.C. So don't say it's hopeless. If God is still sending people in, that tells me he's not written it off yet. What he has not written off, we must not write off. Lean in, and let's see what God does. God bless y'all. Thank you.